And welcome to the Rick House. My name is Cyrus Farmer, and you are watching and listening to the Stomp the Tea podcast. Folks, we have a lot of ground to cover tonight, so let me tell you exactly what we're going to be getting into. We are going to be talking, first and foremost, about a new avocation that I have. Some kind of like recreational pursuit that I'm going to be doing this summer and possibly beyond that I think you're actually going to get a big kick out of. Obviously, we're also going to be talking about the NBA playoffs. I mean, we're in the conference finals. One conference final has ended. Another conference final has been extended to a sixth game. So we'll be talking about that. And of course, we will be talking about everyone's favorite segment. What are you drinking tonight? But first, let me start where we always start for the last 2.5 months and inform all of you that we are now currently on May 29th. We are on day 82 of the Wolf Watch. Day 82. Ocho dos. Yes, 82 of the Wolf Watch. And for those of you who took the over like I did, the over being that we would still be in the Wolf Watch post-Memorial Day, it's time for you to start thinking about cashing in your tickets. Folks, it's been a long slog at this point, the Wolf Watch. But I do believe, I'm not positive, but I do believe that there may be some movement on getting that Wolf Convection gourmet countertop oven that I bought for my wife for her birthday unboxed between now and the 4th of July. So I will keep you posted as always. Now, let's talk about my new summer avocation. Folks, I recently bought something that I've never bought before in my life, even though I've actually had a recreational association with this game since I was in my teens. What did I buy? Folks, I bought a pool cue. Let me show you what it looks like. This is like the case that I bought. This is the brand. I think it's called Krykel. I'm not even sure how it's pronounced. But this pool cue is, you can see, very substantial. This is the base. Look at that. Oh, is that beautiful? It's the kind of like a lacquer finish. Red, black, and white, or off-white. And here is the carbon tip attachment where the tip of the pool cue is located. Why, folks, did I buy a pool cue? Well, let me tell you. I have a neighbor who's a big fan of a pool hall here in Philadelphia. It's in South Philly. It's actually like a 5-minute walk from the Italian Market in Philadelphia. That is this Vietnamese-owned pool hall. And they have probably about 10, 12 tables. And you can go there during the day. You can go there at night. Incredibly affordable. And, you know, I've played pool since the time I was, again, in my teen years. I always had friends who had a pool table, and I would go over to their place or their parents' place and play pool. At one point in my life, we had a pool table at the house that we lived. It was awesome. So I decided to pick this up again. And why did I buy the pool cue once again? Because it's like almost anything else in life. If you're going to pursue a recreational activity, why pursue that activity with used or borrowed equipment? Buy your own, right? It's very similar to golf. You know, buying a new driver or buying a new putter is not necessarily going to make you a great golfer. It might not even make you a better golfer. But if you buy the equipment, you'll get a chance to know that equipment when you use it. And that equipment gets a chance to know you. So you take out a variable on the performance angle that literally allows you to kind of evaluate your progress in real time, because you're not using rented clubs every time you decide to go play golf. Same thing with this pool cue. I'm not using a whatever warped pool stick is in the joint while I'm shooting pool. So I'm very excited about it, folks. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Pool Hall Summer, I am calling it. And, you know, there are several places here in Philadelphia where you can go and play pool, whether it's a pool hall or whether it's a bar with a pool table. I have to tell you, I have determined that I am going to bring my personal pool cue with me every time I'm going out to play pool. Now, there's something you have to understand, folks, about owning a pool stick. There are several people who I've seen play pool at pool halls who bring their own pool stick and are very marginal, if not lousy, players of pool. So, again, just because you own your own pool stick doesn't mean that you're going to be this unbelievable pool shark. But what it does mean is that you are committed to trying to improve. You're committed to try and get better. And that is why I am going to bring my pool cue with me to every single place I play pool this summer, Pool Hall Summer, here in Philadelphia. So I wanted to let you guys know about that. This cue, I mean, in the past, I've normally favored like a heavier cue stick. This cue is somewhere between 18 and a half to 20 ounces, right? I mean, in the past, I normally played like a 21 ounce, even up to a 25 ounce pool cue. But this particular cue, again, the Crackle, I'll show it to you again. It really performed well on the breaks. When I'm breaking after a game win, when I'm breaking, and I got some good action off the cue ball with this. And I'm talking about backspin, topspin, all of that, right? I'm really excited. I've only played with this cue once, but folks, I'm very excited to employ this cue the rest of the summer and beyond. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to it. All right. At this point in the program, I would be remiss if I didn't remind you, the viewing public, to tell anyone and everyone that you know, and people you don't know, how much you love the Stomp the Tee podcast. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell anyone within earshot that this is a show that is worth checking out, because we are here for you. We do this for you. We give you content you can't find anywhere else online and beyond. And we'll be here week in, week out, as we always say, whether you like it or not. That's how consistent we are, because we are professionals. Stomp the tea. Spread the word. All right. Now, let's get into the NBA playoffs. First and foremost, congratulations to the Oklahoma City Thunder for reaching the NBA Finals as representatives and winners of the Western Conference. Folks, I have to tell you, they are a wonderfully balanced team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, obviously led by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, SGA. They play tremendous, if not handsy and physical, defense. We don't know how good they are defensively, historically, because they haven't won anything yet. But obviously, they present a tremendous challenge to anyone who is going to try to either run an offense or make shots while facing the Oklahoma City Thunder. So, let's give them their kudos. Let's give them their credit. I actually thought the Minnesota Timberwolves were going to win that series. I could not have been more wrong. Oklahoma City wins it in five. The Minnesota Timberwolves go out with a whimper. But we'll get into that more a little bit later. I have to say, there was a reason that the Thunder were the best team all year in the NBA. Again, we talked about that defense. We talked about it being handsy. We talked about it being physical. But they are also have a very young roster filled with people who can make shots. It is amazing to watch them play. It's about as together as you'll ever see any basketball team in history. They really play well together. And that's a credit to the team itself. Certainly a credit to their coach. What's his name? Mark Daigneault. They are a fabulous team who are worthy representatives of the Western Conference. And I can't wait to see what they're going to do in the NBA Finals. I don't know how anyone does not favor them to win it all. So, there is that. Let's talk a little bit about the reigning NBA MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, SGA. Look, I know Game 5 was a blowout in favor of the Thunder to clinch the Western Conference. Fine. I get it. To me, the most informative game in the entire series was Game 4. Let's kind of rewind the tape. Minnesota had blown the Oklahoma City Thunder out in Game 3, their first game in Minnesota in the Western Conference Finals. Anthony Edwards, I think, had 30. I think the Thunder lost by 30 or 40 points in that game. And late in the game, there's a clip of SGA talking to one of his teammates, talking about there are three things that went wrong with this game. And if we fix two of them, it's probably a different outcome. It's awesome. So what happened in Game 4? If you look at SGA, you saw a player responding to the moment. And the moment was, my team needs me to help them bounce back from this horrible blowout that we suffered in Game 3. We don't want to let the series get away from us. We're not trying to turn this series with Minnesota into the series we just finished with Denver by letting Minnesota win two games in a row and get back to even. SGA stepped up. And the crazy thing about SGA is that he made it look so easy. I mean, so easy. He got to his spots literally as calmly as someone who is walking backwards with no fear of falling. That's what SGA, that's what his offensive ability looks like when he's in the middle of these high-pressure, high-leverage games. Like a man walking backwards with no fear of falling. It's amazing. SGA had multiple guys from the Timberwolves guard him, take turns guarding him, whether it was Anthony Edwards himself, whether it was Julius Randle from time to time, very rarely, but from time to time, whether it was Rudy Gobert, who is a multiple-time defensive player of the year. And SGA just calmly cross, between the legs, step back, and hits the shot. Let me give you his stats for game four, SGA. He was 13 for 30 in attempts, total attempts. He was only 2 for 7 from three-point land, but he scored 40 points for his team. 40. In a critical game when he knew that he did not want his team to let Minnesota get to even being 2-2. He was like, that can't happen. And the funny thing about it is even when SGA wasn't getting the calls that he normally gets on fouls, we talked about this last week or two, about SGA getting so much respect from the refs, and he only has one MVP, which is a big deal, the fact that he has an MVP. So that counts. Do not get me wrong. He's a worthy MVP. He was the best player in this league all year. So he deserves to get any kind of call. But it seemed to me that he was getting every kind of call like he had won multiple MVPs, which is nothing wrong with that. Every great player in the history of basketball has accepted the calls from refs, quick whistles, any of that. You take whatever you can to gain an advantage that's going to help you win the game. But even when SGA wasn't getting calls in game four of the Western Conference Finals, he still got to his spots. He still kept his team involved in the offense. And he still made shots. It was very, very, very impressive. I can't tell you how impressive it was. Now look, every time in game four that the Minnesota Timberwolves made a run, Oklahoma City, usually led by SGA, would respond. And they would open the lead back up to 5, 7, 9, 11 points or more. I never felt like the Timberwolves had a chance to actually win game four to bring them to 2-2 in the series. They had to scratch, claw, and fight the Minnesota Timberwolves just to lose by two. So I never thought that they could actually win the game. And I got to tell you, I think it's number 8, Jalen Williams. Boy, what a player. I mean, that kid can play. I know he had a couple of bad games throughout the course of the playoffs this year. I think he had one particularly bad game against Denver. But he in game four, he scores 30, 31 points. I mean, he makes big shot after big shot after big shot. And I was trying to think about who he reminded me of. Clearly, in my mind, Jalen Williams is a number 2 on this Oklahoma City Thunder roster as currently constructed. But there have been historic number 2s. If I think about number twos in the history of the NBA because of my age and the era I started watching basketball in. Not started watching basketball in, but the prime formative viewing years of my early basketball watching. They were informed by Jordan, who I was never a fan of. I've told this story before, but you know, I was a Knicks fan. And I couldn't stand how Jordan always beat the Knicks like a drum. But I had to give Jordan credit during the flu game against Utah. I always thought Magic Johnson was the greatest basketball player I ever saw. And when Jordan came out during the flu game and essentially willed his team to a win during that game, I had to get off my high horse and salute the man who is really, in my opinion, the greatest player to ever play the game, Michael Jordan. But that being said, when I think of great number twos in the history of the NBA, because of Michael Jordan, I think of Scottie Pippen. Jalen Williams is not nearly the defensive player that Scottie Pippen was in his prime or, you know, anytime Scottie was in the NBA. But Jalen Williams is a much better scorer and offensive weapon than Scottie ever was consistently during his time in the NBA. And I was thinking about this, you know, there are other second fiddles. There are other number twos. It's interesting. There are very few number twos who become number ones, right? Yeah, I mean, you can think about, I'll give you an example. Tracy McGrady was kind of second fiddle to his cousin, Vince Carter, when they were in Toronto. And then Tracy becomes a number one when he moves on to Orlando. To me, the most famous, now I may be leaving some people out who played in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. That's possible. But to me, the most famous number two who became an all-time great as a number one in the history of the NBA, obviously, Kobe Bryant. It always comes back to Kobe. Why, I do not know. But it always comes back to Kobe. Kobe was a legitimate second fiddle to Shaq during the first three championships that the Lakers won while they were both on the team under Phil Jackson. As great as Kobe was, it was still Shaq's team. And Shaq, how do I know this? Because Shaq won three NBA Finals MVPs. As great as Kobe was, he was not the number one player on that team. It was Shaq. So for Shaq to leave and then Kobe to become a number one in his own right, and for Kobe to become, in my opinion, one of the top 10 players in the history of the NBA after starting out as Shaq's number two, pretty hard to do, but very impressive. That's kind of who Jalen Williams of the Oklahoma City Thunder, to take a long way around on this story, reminds me of. Now, obviously, Kobe was a tremendous defensive player as well as an offensive threat. But Jalen Williams could be a phenomenal, phenomenal player given the opportunity. And I don't know that he's going to be a Thunder his entire career because I think he may be too talented to stay on that team. Time will tell. Look, let's be fair. I came to the Oklahoma City Thunder party late. I mean, I did not watch much regular NBA season, regular season basketball this year. But I get it now. I know why people speak about SGA and the Oklahoma City Thunder the way they do. I understand why they are a prohibitive finals favorite to win it all when the finals start. I get it. I mean, Lou Dort, Chet Holmgren. I mean, they have so many players. And apparently they have like all these draft picks over the next 2 or 3 years. They're not going anywhere for like a decade. It's going to be really, really fun to watch this team not only develop, but continue to grow. With SGA leading the charge, of course. Which brings us, in my mind, to Minnesota when we talk about leading the charge. Anthony Edwards. I think you all know I've been somewhat high on Anthony Edwards. I asked a question, I think a week or two ago, is Anthony Edwards Jordan? And my answer at the time I asked the question was, it's too soon to tell. Well, I think we can definitively answer that question now. And the answer to that question would be no, he is not Jordan today. That's not a slam on Anthony Edwards. Very few people are Jordan. You can't even fill out a hand of NBA players, of people who, quote unquote, were Jordan. So it's not a slam on Anthony Edwards, but it is an acknowledgement that he is not Jordan at this point in his career. Now, Anthony Edwards is still 23 years old. I think he turns 24 soon. And it's kind of crazy. I mean, he's accomplished so much in his career. And yet, as much as Anthony Edwards has accomplished, he has never been close. And let's be fair. And this is not a negative. It is just an acknowledgement of fact. Anthony Edwards has never been close to winning a regular season MVP. So, as young as he is, as talented as he is, he's not really supposed to be in the same league as someone as SGA. But if you're Anthony Edwards, during game four, you have to take more than 13 shots. If you're Anthony Edwards, during game four, you have to find your way around, no matter how great a defender he is, you have to find your way around or through Lou Dort of the Oklahoma City Thunder. If you are Anthony Edwards, you cannot, under any circumstance, allow Alex Caruso to guard you, to hold you down, to keep you from scoring when you outweigh him by 30 to 40 pounds. Anthony is a wonderful player, but sometimes he's patient, but sometimes he's too patient. It's very strange. His whole demeanor is different. Again, you know, he says, I don't want to be the face of the league. This is not going to break me. I'll be fine. He's a different kind of cat, which is fine. He's allowed to be. And he's young, so he still has a chance to grow into something that someone like me thinks he has a possibility to do. But right now, no. He's not Jordan. He's a very, very, very talented player who's not Michael Jordan at this point in his career. Again, no shame in that. Now, it's weird because if you look at where the Oklahoma City Thunder defense is, I don't know how good they are historically. We talked about this. I don't know how good they are historically because they haven't won anything yet. But if you're Anthony Edwards, is that Oklahoma City Thunder defense tougher, more physical than the Bad Boys of Detroit in the late 80s? Bill Laimbeer, Joe Dumars, John Sally, Rodman, Isaiah Thomas. Is Oklahoma City more physical than the Pat Riley 1990s era New York Knicks? Mason, Oakley, Ewing, Starks here and there, Xavier McDaniel. I mean, Michael Jordan had to get through the Pistons to become Michael Jordan. Really, he had to go through the Boston Celtics, who weren't playing patty cake, ask Kurt Rambis, on defense either. It started with the Celtics, but then he has to go through the Bad Boy Pistons. Is that defense by Oklahoma City Thunder, is it better than the Bad Boys? Is it more physical than the Bad Boys of Detroit? I would say no. Even if it is, you got to take more than 13 shots in a crucial game. So, it's weird. I mean, maybe I've been comparing the wrong player to Jordan at this point. Maybe I should be comparing SGA to Jordan and not Anthony Edwards. Again, does not mean Anthony Edwards is a bad player. Doesn't mean that he can't possibly get to Jordan level, but he is not there right now. SGA might be. All right. Folks, I have to make a confession. The New York Knicks won the game 5 tonight in the Garden to push the Eastern Conference Finals to a 6th game. And the Knicks are down 3-2 to Indiana in the Eastern Conference Finals. The confession I have to make is, does anyone believe, anyone being me, that the Knicks or the Indiana Pacers can beat the Oklahoma City Thunder in the NBA Finals? I have to be honest. Is it possible? Absolutely. But do I think it's likely? I don't. I mean, as much firepower as the Indiana Pacers have, how are they struggling with a Knicks team that, let's be fair, has two superstars, let's say stars, two great players, let's say, in Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns. And they get contributions from Mikal Bridges and Josh Hart, Robinson. But it's not really an offensive-minded team, the Knicks. They're kind of a gritty team who has the ability to score. How are the Indiana Pacers, how do they find themselves in Game 6 versus this New York Knicks team? Well, I can tell you how, because the Knicks are a gritty, gutty team, which is great. That goes a long way. I just don't know how the Knicks would beat the Oklahoma City Thunder in the NBA Finals if that were to occur. Now, it's easier for me to see how the Indiana Pacers could beat the Oklahoma City Thunder in the NBA Finals. But even that is hard to envision. Oklahoma City is so balanced. They're so well coached. I just have a hard time seeing anyone, either of the two teams in the East, beating the Oklahoma City Thunder. But I will give you my official pick when the finals are actually set, and I will tell you who I think will win it all. Obviously, by next week's show. All right. Folks, we are at one of my favorite points in every episode. And that is the point where I get to ask you a question. And what is that question? Well, that question is, what are you drinking tonight? Well, I can tell you what I'm drinking. And that is the Saints Alley, the Herald. Folks, I'm going to tell you a little bit about this product. I'm going to tell you what I think about this product. It is distilled in Texas and Indiana. Spoiler alert, this is sourced partially. But it is produced and bottled by the Licorice Enterprises, Inc. in Denniston, Texas. I don't know how familiar you guys are with one of the co-founders of this Saints Alley, but it's a guy named Chris Trevino. He goes by the nickname Liquor Hound on YouTube, and he has a tremendous, tremendous show, podcast, postings under the name The Liquor Hound. Do yourself a favor. He covers so much alcohol, and he reviews so much alcohol. And almost every review he has is incredibly informative. So do yourself a favor. Look up Liquor Hound, look up Chris Trevino, and go watch some of the stuff that he does. He is a real resource and very insightful. So this is Chris's foray into actual whiskey making, right? This happens to be, obviously, a bourbon. He partnered with Licorice Enterprises. Licorice is the distillery that produce Iron Root, which is one of my kind of niche favorite labels in bourbon and whiskey. They make a wonderful bourbon and whiskey called the Harbinger, which is overproof, but very, very, very drinkable. So there is that. I'm going to read you what it says on the back of the bottle about this particular product. It says, "This meticulous blend brings together the spice of MGP's High Rye Bourbon," MGP out of Indiana, obviously, "Iron Root's award-winning sweet and viscous heirloom corn bourbon, accentuated by the deep stone fruits and mahogany of French Armagnac casks." So this is finished in Armagnac cask, which kind of gives it, kind of takes the edge off of the actual bourbon itself. This particular bottle is batch 14. It is one of 2,400 bottles. And I'm going to read you the tasting notes directly off the website of Licorice Enterprises, which, again, produces Iron Root. Their tasting notes are orange oil, treacle, tobacco, honey-drenched dates on the nose, joined by roasted cashews, anise, blackberry compote, Darjeeling tea, and fig pudding. Now, I bought this bottle for $60. What do I think of it? Folks, it's very drinkable. I have to be honest. It is very, very drinkable. I mean, it's $60 a bottle. You know, I would kind of just appreciate it for what it is, but you can drink it neat. You can drink it on the rocks. You can drink it in a highball. You can drink it in a cocktail, like a Manhattan. It's just a very well-rounded, versatile whiskey. And I think it's going to be very difficult for you to be disappointed in this Saints Alley, the Herald. This is, again, batch 14. I think it's a really well-done alcohol. I mean, it's bourbon that's not super spicy. And yet, it is 53.5% ABV, which makes it 107 proof. Obviously, it's non-chill filtered. It's completely worth buying, and it is completely worth having in your bar. Saints Alley, the Herald, batch 14. And that is the show for tonight, folks. I have to tell you, we'll be right back here coming at you next week. I'm going this weekend to the Roots Family Picnic that's being held here in Philadelphia in Fairmount Park. There are a number of acts that are going to be playing. Headlined by my man, Lenny Kravitz. This will be my second time seeing Lenny Kravitz live. First time was at the Greek in Los Angeles. Second time will be here in Fairmount Park in Philadelphia. I will tell you all about it next week with a number of different details about the Roots Family Picnic, among other things. Thank you for joining us, as always. My name is Cyrus Farmer. This is the Stomp the Tea podcast. Once again, we really appreciate your viewership and your listenership to the Stomp the Tea podcast. Tell your friends. But until then, we will see you on the first tee, as always. Pool hall summer coming up.